Blue Roots and Uncommon Wealth, the Kentucky photographs of Cary Goff and Guy Mendes, is a visual homage to the Commonwealth of Kentucky, the bluegrass state, by two generations of artists. The exhibition is currently running through January 25th at Iris Book Cafe and Gallery on Main Street and over the Rhine. The two photographers are my guests this evening, Cary and Guy. Welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Guy, let's begin with your career. You moved from New Orleans to Lexington in the 60s. Share the story of how your photography career began.
Well, I took pictures as a kid, as a teenager. As a kid, I had a Brownie, and as a teenager, I had a Polaroid Swinger. I took pictures of my cat and my feet. And in school, I worked maybe on the campus paper some and took some pictures, but I also was a writer. But when it came time for college, I lived near Tulane, and I would like to have gone to Tulane, but I couldn't afford to go to Tulane, and all my friends were going to LSU, and they were LSU. They shaved your head if you were a male, and they made you take ROTC and live in the football stadium dorm, and I didn't want to do any of those things. And my parents had lived in Lexington, Kentucky for 2 years, right before I was born. In fact, they moved back only 6 months before I was born. So that it occurred to me much later that I was probably conceived in Lexington, Kentucky. But I swam upstream, went to school at UK, and lo and behold, I say I was raised by wolves there. I fell in with poets and photographers, and Wendell Berry, writer, and Gene Meatyard, the photographer, sort of shepherded me along, and I was very fortunate in that regard.
Would you enlarge a little on that?
I think when I started school, I thought I might be a journalist, and indeed worked on the campus paper and worked a couple of summers for Newsweek magazine. But I heard Wendell Berry speak against the Vietnam War, and I was moved by his talk, and I resolved to take his classes, which I did for the next 3 years. And he and his wife introduced me to Ralph Eugene Meatyard, this wonderful photographer whose images were unlike any I'd ever seen. And I had been a who, what, when, where, why, and how kind of guy. But I saw this exhibit of Gene Meatyard's work, and it was pictures that didn't tell the who, what, when, where, why, and how. They asked the ineffable questions, you know. And they were very unusual. And I just started hanging out at his... He was an optician. He sold eyeglasses. But he had a little gallery in his front room, and I hung out there, and I got to hang out in the back and look through pictures. And on the weekends, go for drives looking for old houses to kind of... barge into.
You published a book titled 40-40, 40 Years, 40 Portraits. Is the crux of the book your desire to show the kind of talent and creativity that marks Kentucky artists?
Well, and there's some Louisiana people in there because I grew up in New Orleans. My parents are in there and a couple other people. And in one regard, the book flies in the face of the notion that Kentucky is an illiterate place with barefoot people running around. Drinking moonshine, and we do some of that, but there are other times we wear shoes and drink bourbon and ride horses. But what I set out to do, or what Philip Jones, this young curator, artist himself, publisher, he said, let's do a book of portraits. And it occurred to me that for 40 years I had been photographing what I call now seers, soothsayers, spirit guides, mentors, and muses, people who were really important to me, either showing me the way in some discipline, you know, writing or photography or performance artist. I used to come to Cincinnati to see things like the Living Theater. There was lots of mind-blowing things going on in the 60s. So the portrait book was a way to gather together some people that I knew well, most people that I knew well that I photographed, others that I just met but struck up some affinity with, and people I sought out. I also traveled for 35 years for public TV around Kentucky, and I always took my own cameras, and there was always downtime, so it was an entree to the state. One project I worked on over 2 years, I think I traveled 10,000 miles inside Kentucky.
Who is the subjects of some of your photographs in the Iris Gallery exhibition?
Jonathan Williams is one who, Jonathan wasn't a Kentuckian. He was a poet and publisher from North Carolina, who had studied at Princeton, at the Art Institute in Chicago, and then at Black Mountain College in North Carolina, which was this art school in the late 40s, early 50s. where Jasper Johnson, Robert Rauschenberg, Merce Cunningham, and Robert Creeley, and all these great art stars of today were students then. And Jonathan Williams came out of there wanting to not only be an artist himself, but to find other artists. He, like Philip Jones, he was an artist who sought out other artists. And Jonathan Williams would come to Kentucky to find Gene Meteyard, Guy Davenport, Wendell Berry, Thomas Merton, and he would bring them together. There are pictures of a group of them at Gethsemane Monastery. Merton died in 68, so I was just on the cusp of knowing these guys, and I didn't get to meet Merton, unfortunately. But Jonathan Williams I really appreciated because he came, he stirred up the pot, he published a number of us in Kentucky in his Jargon Society books. And so he's pictured in his underwear having a drink of bourbon in Zoder's Best Western Motel in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, because we were about to go on a hike the next day. And he and his boyfriend were outrageously gay guys, even back in the early 70s, and, you know, when the closets were still pretty full. So I had a good upbringing by wolves and poets and photographers.
Would you tell us just quickly what kind of cameras you use? And then I'd like to hear how you first met Cary.
I use three different size cameras. I use small, medium, and large. I use a Leica, a 35 millimeter, and I use an old Hasselblad that's a 2 1/4 square inch negative. And I use a 4x5 that makes 4x5 inch, you know, bellows camera with a dark cloth. And then I have a digital camera as well for when people want me to do something fast. And I first met Cary 10 years ago. No? How much?
98.
So, gosh, 16 years ago. Cary was a college student,
high school student.
She came to KET, public television, where I worked, state network in Kentucky, and was my intern for half a year.
I think it was 3 months.
3 months.
Yeah.
And I had usually UK students, but you came, I had a couple of high school students and who were always helpful, who did some of the grunt work, logging tapes, but they also got immersed in projects. And at the time I met, Cary came to work with me. I was working on a Folkways series called World of Our Own, and it included a musical segment about the Muhlenberg sound from Western Kentucky. There was a sound, most people like my parents and I remember it from the Tennessee Ernie Ford show, 16 Tons and What Do You Get? But the Muhlenberg sound goes back to this black guy named Arnold Schultz, of whom there is one photograph. We found that. But he influenced Merle Travis, Ike Everly, father of the Everly Brothers, and a number of other musicians, some of whom are still playing, Eddie Pennington and Jesse Aldrich, down there around Cadiz, Kentucky.
He even had links to Bill Monroe.
Arnold Schultz did.
Yeah, in the next county over, he'd get on the train and visit Bill Monroe and his family.
And the Muhlenberg sound is this wonderful sound that you use your thumb. It's also called thumb picking, right? And you use your thumb for the drone and the bass notes and your other fingers for the melody. And it's a real rich sound and complex. You know, it's not just your zum, zum, zum. It's very complex. It's like the blues. You know how the blues can be pretty basic or they can be very complex and like B.B. King's guitar. So the Muhlenberg sound caught Carrie's attention. She claims I gave her a book about it, and that set her off on a journey. I'll turn it over to her now.
Well, Cary, you're a Kentucky native who has lived in England now for many years. What continues to draw you home, and how's that reflected in your photography?
Kentucky's a hard place to shake. I left sort of 12 years ago. I moved to England, and when I started taking photographs over there, I realized I just wasn't getting what I wanted to, and so when I did my master's, I started coming back to photograph Kentucky, and it just sparked it all again. I decided to focus on the music because music was one of the ways I'd kind of stayed in touch with home. This idea had been brewing ever since Guy gave me that book, and I put two and two together.
Well, one of the pages of your website is titled A Music So Subtle and Vast, where you say that your photographs reflect the lives of prominent bluegrass musicians and the places that they feature in their lyrics, and that these images are meditations on time and nostalgia. And who are some of the musicians and what places have you photographed?
I've spent a lot of time in Western Kentucky between Ohio County, which is where Bill Monroe's from, and the ghosts of his actions are all around, and the way the community interacts with his legacy is interesting. Muhlenberg County as well. It's got a pretty rich activity. It's where paradise lay. Lots of strange ways that everything's been preserved in these parks and these jamborees and all this, and it's still an active part of their what happens in the state, which is really nice. But then I've been to sort of Eastern Kentucky, which is it's a little more embedded in the landscape. It just feels musical down there. So you've got kind of Highway 23, which they call it the country music highway, which a lot of country musicians seem to have been born just around there.
Reading, writing, and Route 23. Those were the ways to get out of Eastern Kentucky.
It was, yeah. So you've got Dwight Yoakam and Ricky Skaggs and the Judds. But then you've also got Loretta Lynn and people like String Bean, who was one of the first Grand Ole Opry people. So yeah, there are so many people. And then you've got Red Foley from Berea, and you've got Renfrew Valley, which is a really interesting place because John Lair had the idea to start preserving this old way of life he saw disappearing in as early as 1939, which is interesting.
Could you tell us a little bit about how Guy has influenced your work and also what kind of cameras you use?
Okay. When I worked for Guy, he was making these great documentaries about other artists as well. We worked on a few things. Steel artists.
Oh,
Busy
John
Bee, Kentucky.
Henry?
John Henry,
John
that's
Henry,
it.
Right.
Well, that makes sense. Steel.
Yeah.
And that was nice seeing how he worked with somebody. I was working on the B-roll, I think. Yeah, and so looking at the landscape that this guy was working in and how that was influencing and all that sort of thing. Also worked on an Underground Railroad thing, and I think that a lot of my work focuses on these historic channels that kind of run underneath the landscape that's not always apparent on the surface. And I think that working with Guy sort of sparked that. Thanks for that.
Cool.
And I use a Mamiya. I have an RB, which is sort of a studio camera, but I do take it out in the field. And I also have a Mamiya 7, so that's more of a range finder, and it gives me a good 6-7 neg. It looks almost square, but not quite.
6x7s.
They say it backwards in England.
Well, yeah. What a wonderful idea to show your work together. Blue Roots and Uncommon Wealth, the Kentucky photographs of Cary Goff and Guy Mendes, is a Photo Focus exhibition on view at Iris Book Cafe and Gallery at 1331 Main Street in Over the Rhine through January 25th.
Iris Books has been great to us. Bill Messer and Julie Fay are wonderful, and we're glad to be there.
Well, how nice to have you in town. Our listeners will find a link at WVXU.org. The two photographers are my guests this evening, Cary and Guy. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Jane Durrell.
But they learned to read and write Route 23 to the job they've been waiting in the old city factory. They learned to read and write goes to the north to the left. A coal miner can't afford. They thought reading, writing, Route 23 would take them to the good life they have never seen. They didn't know that old highway would lead them to a pearl of misery. It turns out that that old highway made you to the world of misery. They found out.